The following is the evening talk with His Holiness Srila Satsarupdas Goswami on February 28, 1992 at 26 2nd Avenue in New York.
Some of you may be regulars to the programs here. This is the first time for me since the reopening time. But it's very special for me because it's a very special place. And I thought I could try to help you who were not here at that time to get a little of the feeling for what it was like when His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, was actually preaching here in 1966. So to do that, I have a couple of excerpts from tapes, and I'll also try to speak on some of the themes on which he preached from here. And then also I can try to evoke some of the different memories of activities if you're interested enough, and if we get some nice rapport. For example, you've heard of different things that happened here, and I know just where they happened, what corner, and all the different things. And now someone may say, why all the reminiscence? I think most people who are here know why. Anything connected with the pure devotee is worshipable. And moreover, what was going on here, what Prabhupada was doing here, is so vital to anyone's Krishna consciousness that if we can pick it up, then we can better practice Krishna consciousness. Krishna conscious bhakti yoga, as far as we're concerned, means following Prabhupada's teachings, Bhagavad Gita as it is, and his books, other books. So as we advance, the one thing that happens is we develop our relationship with the founder Acharya, who lives forever, and his followers live with him. The spiritual master is still present by his instructions. So just as Krishna is present in Vrindavan, if you go there, you have a better opportunity to be in contact with him because of his eternal pastimes there. So if we can get more vivid impressions of Prabhupada's preaching in 26 2nd Avenue, it will help our relationship with him. So the first thing, and also I speak without fear of repeating things, because just like with Krishna's pastimes, many of the things are repeated again and again by the six Goswamis, but with different poetry and different insights. So if I become afraid that you've heard this before, then I won't say anything. Mm-hmm. But we'll try to, as we'll relish them again, and perhaps new lights will come out also. So Prabhupada was known as the Swami, or as affectionately Swamiji. So we'll hereafter tonight refer to him like that. Sometimes Prabhupada. So as you know, he lived in New York City for a year. 1965, he arrived here from being in Pennsylvania. And he went to in the 70s, uptown, where he was given this very temporary little perch in the yoga ashram of a yogi there, Dr. Mishra. So he had one little room, and although it wasn't legally arranged for living there, Prabhupada stayed in that place. And all those activities took place of being very much alone in the city, with no followers, few casual people, and the whole prospect of whether he could do anything was questionable in his mind, but he was always trusting in Krishna. Then, went through a cold winter with some heavy snowstorms. First time he ever saw snow in his life. He was 72 years old. Had no money, no support from India. You can hardly imagine what that's like. So then the kind of climax of what moved him downtown was when he had all his belongings stolen from his room. Typewriter, he had been donated, and tape recorder, whatever he had, it was stolen one day. And at the same time, some young people from downtown, a restaurant called the Paradox, had found Swamiji uptown. Otherwise, there was just some older people who attended Dr. Mishra's sessions. So some of these people told Swamiji about what it was like on the Lower East Side, how so many young people from all over the country were migrating here, and it was a kind of a spiritual center, and people were searching. So with the robbery and nowhere to go, thinking he should go back to India, he thought, all right, let me take this invitation and go down. So then he went to the Bowery. And just to make this story short, he got some good response there, especially from some musicians living in the area. And they liked to come and hear the singing, the sound. And they heard him. But nobody really took seriously that they should become a disciple and follow the four rules. Although they certainly took the Swami as a serious person, but they didn't take seriously also that he wanted to start a movement and he wanted people to get together with him, start a society for spreading Krishna consciousness. So although this is not the first place where he was in New York City, as soon as he came here, things seemed to change, as if Krishna was now ready to start everything as a preaching movement. With so many efforts and preparations made in Prabhupada's whole life, and what to speak of the whole parampara behind him, with statements, mysterious sounding statements, that one day the chanting of Hare Krishna would go outside of India, would be spread all over the world. Then the specific desire for Krishna consciousness to be a world religion by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then the practical preaching by Bhakti Saranda Saraswati Thakur. All this pushing Prabhupada to come here, but it didn't seem possible. And then when he came here, it all began. Although that wasn't like some sensational thing, it was done quietly, gradually, by his patience and devotion. I was saying that his activities are exemplary for us. So whether, especially if someone is a preacher, or in his own life he's trying to develop Krishna consciousness, you have to be patient and be determined. And eventually Krishna will reveal. So when he came here, he also got, as Mukunda Maharaj explained on the day of the opening, reopening here, simultaneously Prabhupada rented an apartment in the back, on the second floor, and this place. So it's not that he lived in here, but he held, but some men, a few men, lived in here and used his bathroom. It's not like it is now, all fancy, remodeled and everything. The rundown place, instead of three lights, there was just one naked bulb hanging down on a string, on a wire. And in the beginning, nothing, the floor, it wasn't this kind of a floor, and there was no rugs, no dais of any kind. But he opened up Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. He had Kirtan and Bhagavad Gita lecture. So our program here, the regular program ISKCON is putting on now, is based on the same format. Start with the Kirtan, then we hear from Bhagavad Gita, and then we can have Kirtan again. So I wanted to begin by playing a few minutes of a Kirtan that was actually recorded here in 1966. There are several recordings. There's one recording which was just clapping and cartels, which is very early. The recording isn't quite as good as the one I'm going to play, so I didn't play it. But you can really hear that Prabhupada has come, he's saving the lost fallen souls, and you hear the chorus of the chanting. The voices are very rough, and it's kind of a forlorn group, but responding still to Swamiji's compassionate offer to them to chant Hare Krishna. So, for those opening kirtans, I remember when I first came, it was still in that first stage. There was no decoration or rugs or anything. And Swamiji, he sat on, it was very popular in those days, those cheap Chinese type mats, yellow straw mat, and he was sitting on one. So that put him on the same level as everybody else. And it was in the middle of the summer, and he was dressed in sannyas dress, but no kurta or any shirt on top. It was very impressive to see him. And maybe half a dozen people were there. So at those times, he would just hand out some cartels and then tell us how to chant. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. And then start. We all clap. And then he would start the chanting with that rhythm. No drums, no harmoniums or anything like that. This kirtan is a little later when Swamiji got a drum. This is a one-headed bongo drum. And he plays it as if it's a madrunga. He would hold it, and just with one hand, he plays beats on it and makes it sound like an Indian madrunga. He had that for a long time. The whole summer, he took it to the park, and in the winter, we didn't have anything else except that. And we thought that was the drum. And it was the drum that called, that broke the American silence and called forth Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So in this recording, you hear that drum with his unique beat, and the devotees are a little more together in their kirtan. And he sings the tune, the tune that he always sang in the evening, which is now one of so many tunes in the repertoire of the Hare Krishna musicians. But it's still the tune, the Hare Krishna tune, because it's the one that he brought with him and would constantly chant. So we'll listen for a few minutes, mainly to get the feel of it, so that then we'll have a kirtan, and I'll sing that tune, and we can meditate on the Hare Krishna mantra as Prabhupada wanted us to do. And then I'll speak a little, and I'll also have an excerpt from a lecture that he gave here. And then I'll comment some more on that. So, let's listen for a little while to Swamiji's Kirtan, 1966. Thank you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna.
His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki ISKCON Movement Ki Go Premananda Hari. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Go Premananda Hari Hari. So what usually happened after Swamiji led the kirtan, the audience would quiet down, many people would be coming for the first time, and then when they understood that the Swami was now going to give a lecture, they started to leave. And then when those who stayed and actually began to hear that it was a philosophical lecture, then they left also. So this would be a regular occurrence. There'd be a big crowd like this, and for the kirtan. And this is mostly young people, middle-aged Americans who had come from all parts of the country to live here, to lead the hip mystic life. Had heard about this place and this kirtan, and they came to take part in the kirtan, but not the philosophy. But a small group of devotees, never more than 12, became Prabhupada's followers. I'm talking about the period When Swamiji opened here July 1966 until he left in the second week of January 1967. That was like, that's the real heart of this 26th Second Avenue and Swamiji's participation here. After that, he went to San Francisco. Like if we want to meditate on the year, as I sometimes do, according to what month it is, now, if it was 1967 now, Swamiji would be in San Francisco, and we would be in New York now without him, but trying to have him come back. So he stayed here, and then went to San Francisco, and more or less never came back. He came back, actually, April of 67, but just stayed for less than about a month, until he became very ill. And then after that, then he very rarely came here. Then he was just like a guest lecturer who'd come and stay a few days and then go on to other centers. He had other centers. This was just one of other centers. And his followers, especially Brahmananda, who was the temple president, they carried on here at 26 Second Avenue. But Prabhupada, I'm mostly talking about that period. That is the life of Prabhupada in, at 26 Second Avenue. It's a period of 6 or 7 months in which the whole framework for how to conduct ISKCON and preaching and everything was tested and proved successful. But from the beginning, there was only some who were followers, and then there was many who would come. So as I say, at this point, most of them would leave. And Brahmananda, he recalls that he became an anxiety, that he figured out that at this rate, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, it was like a new crowd would come, they would take part in the kirtan, they would leave. So what was going to happen? Who was going to actually take the Krishna consciousness? Yet they didn't leave with bad feelings. They left feeling very, very happy about chanting, and chanting became popular, and so on. But of course they missed out on something very tremendous, and that is to learn what the chanting is and what Krishna consciousness is and learn how to practice. And that's why Swamiji came here. So we want to try to understand his preaching here. He held kirtan here and he preached here. In one sense, the lectures that he gave, if you listen to the more than 700 recorded lectures of His Divine Grace up until 1977, they're not that much different, but they are different in some ways. But he started right off preaching the philosophy as he would in later years, and people had to catch up to the Sanskrit and to the advanced notions and the surrender that he was teaching. He preached very much with the idea that these people don't know Krishna, and he tried to bring them to Krishna consciousness from scratch, knowing that they didn't have any idea or any faith. Yet at the same time, he was very direct. He didn't hesitate to present that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the first, started with first lessons, but was very definite and strong about them. That there's a spirit soul different than the body. Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and so on. It had a very stunning effect that you would come, and if you had any faith, then right away you would be presented strong conclusions of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, one after another. So that's why within days, somebody who was listening submissively would become a devotee of Krishna and start to practice bhakti yoga. His preaching was so strong. So I would like to mention a few of the themes that he preached on, and then I have a segment. There are about 40 tapes from 1966. I just heard this only coming here in the car from Brooklyn, so it's not that you had to do much research. The themes are there in all his lectures like that. But this is a nice section. It has quite a few typical Prabhupada-isms in a space of a few minutes. He himself recorded these lectures, knowing having some presence of mind that this was an important thing to do. But fortunately, we now still have them. And you can, and many of the things that I'm mentioning, you can hear yourself in the summer, the noises outside with the open door, and how it was very disturbing, but he went on with it. And and his preaching and his voice and so on, you can still hear. So one of the main things that he taught was the chanting. He led the kirtan, and then he asked his audiences to chant Hare Krishna. Whatever he was speaking on, he spoke in those months Bhagavad Gita a lot from the 6th chapter on yoga, from the 9th chapter confidential knowledge, from the 4th chapter about activity, karma, akarma. From those chapters he spoke, and they were full philosophical lectures. As I say, he would broach topics that the audience had no idea of: varnashram, how the society has to be divided into varnashram, and for perfect activity, and yoga. He spoke a lot about yoga. Yoga was popular in those days, and he said how it was not possible to practice Ashtanga yoga or Hatha yoga, but only Bhakti yoga was possible. But whatever the topic, he very often would come to talk about chanting. For example, if it was about yoga, he would say that the meditative silent yoga was rejected by Arjuna as too difficult 5,000 years ago, and Arjuna had so many qualifications. So how can you think that now, in this age where our spiritual qualifications are diminished, that you can practice yoga? You cannot. You can only practice a farce of yoga. The actual yoga is very strict with so many austerities and so on. Therefore, you should chant. And when Prabhupada would come to talk about chanting, he would be very persuasive and urgent about it. This was a direct action message that he had for his audiences, that you've come here and we request you to please chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. It doesn't cost you anything to chant, and you don't have to change any of your activities. But if you chant, you'll find that you become happy in spiritual realization, spiritual life. And unlike myself saying this, when he said it, it was filled with so much conviction and realization, as I said, coming from all the acharyas behind him, that many people just tried it and took it up. It's a modest suggestion, modest proposal, and a promise of tremendous benefit. And as I say, without any, he wasn't embarrassed or self-conscious that it was actually, someone might think of it as a Hindu chant, or we never heard it, or he hasn't explained that much of the theology behind it. He just said, do this, whoever you are here in New York City, try this chanting of Hare Krishna. Please, this is our movement, this is our humble request. So very often, his preaching is to ask people to chant. That means not just in tonight, but when you go, wherever you go, on the street, whatever you do, you can take this with you, chant Hare Krishna. That's one of the most important things he preached. And connected to this, he would, and very intelligently, strategically, he preached that whatever a person is doing in his life, he doesn't have to make so many changes to enter spiritual life. You can keep your occupation or your family, but now learn how to do things so that they are acceptable as bhakti yoga. Or as he said, you dovetail your consciousness with the supreme consciousness. This is a favorite expression of his. And he would emphasize to actually try to convince people that they could do it, it wasn't difficult, that you can just take it up. Not only the chanting, but whatever you may be doing, your occupation, you can do it for Krishna. Of course, how that was to be done, it wasn't always clear. So that, but this is an important part of Prabhupada's preaching, this emphasis on the ease that anyone can take it up without making any other changes. Then if you were interested in how you could do that, another important theme was, and this Prabhupada kept up throughout his life, but it was particularly touching in the early days, his referring to his disciples as like models. And he would say, you should all day long think of how you can think of Krishna, 24 hours a day. Whatever you're doing, you can do it in service to Krishna. Our students are doing this. They have so many duties. It's not just my advertisement, he said. You can ask them. There are so many students here of mine. Ask them how they're feeling happy and how they're doing different services for Krishna, and they're able to think of Krishna. And that was a fact, that he did have maybe a dozen people very busily engaged in doing different things. Some were cooking for the Swami in his room, or cleaning his rooms. And after a while, there was printing and editing, writing of Bhakti Guided magazine, and distributing it on bicycle to the head shops in the Lower East Side and the village. There was chanting, reading, always something to do. And as a result of being engaged in these activities, one can very easily give up a sinful life, illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. But there was no hiding these things. He brought these out and said that they could be done just as his students were doing them. So why don't we now hear from him, and all these things and more you'll hear in just a few minutes of Prabhupada speaking. I'll tell you what he's been speaking to up to now. This very theme. He's saying that Arjuna didn't have to change his occupation. He just had to serve as a warrior. But instead of doing it for his own interest, which is illusion, now learn to do your work under Krishna's direction. So Krishna did not advise that you give up your occupation. He said you should keep it. So then Swamiji pauses and gives his, where we're coming in, he talks about himself. He says, Krishna didn't say you become a mendicant, like a sannyasi, and give up your family and job. No, he didn't say that. And now he gives his own example, that in his case he has done that. And then he explains, so you hear some nice personal talk by Prabhupada about himself and his mission in coming to America. And then he gets back to the theme of just stay in your place and chant Hare Krishna.
You don't say that you give up your engagement and become a mendicant or sannyasi like me and give up your wife and children. No. Krishna does not say that. He'll ask them, why you have given your wife and children? I have given up my wife and children for this purpose. If I am engaged in family life, then I cannot do this missionary work. I've taken absolute center to this work without any distance. So, for a preacher, for a missionary, that is different. But for ordinary man, he does not require to give up his family, his home. He remains in your occupation, he remains at home. But chant this, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Is there any difficulty? Why don't you try? This is our mission. We don't say that you change your life. We simply say that in whatever position you are, you please chant. That's all. You please chant. You'll be happy. You'll be prosperous. Krishna will be pleased upon him, and he will be never in scarcity. Is it not a very nice thing? He will never be unhappy. He will never be in scarcity. That it is guaranteed. Tisham Vityami Juktana Yoga Chivam Mahamah. Those who are thus engaged always in thinking of me. Well, you can do your business and think of Krishna. What is your heart?
I just pause here. You can see the effect this has. And at that time, there was no institution of ISKCON, and so it was just a very personal thing between him and us meaning whoever came. And he was a very powerful, influential person, saying that, why don't you do it? Why don't you try this? And so we would, we responded that, yes, he says we'll always be happy, there'll be no, these words, he had a great influence, you might say a shakti. We say the pure devotee can create faith in faithless person, but there was no faith really, certainly no knowledge, some seeking, attitude of seeking something nice, but not with an idea of such serious commitments, for the most part, on the devotees. So, you could say he took advantage. He was so much older, so much wiser than us. He saw some spiritual inclination, and he exerted his influence over us and took us under his control by these kind of words, night after night, when you come and he's speaking so strongly that if you do this, everything will be gained. And it's so easy. Why don't you do it? He was putting you on the spot as a group, or if you went to see him individually, he would say, why don't you do it? Why don't you follow? And you would say, why? And he would say, no, you should do it. It's very nice. It's a nice thing. This is another. I said he would tell about his students and how you can talk with them. They're always engaged. He would also offer himself indirectly and just by saying, it's such a nice thing, Krishna consciousness. So who is the living example that it's a nice thing? He was the only one. Now, if you are a representative of ISKCON preaching, you can say, it's a very nice movement, and there's so many people who are following this all over the world, and in Russia, it's become very popular, and so many people are developing good qualities. You can refer to them. But he had no one to refer to as evidence, other than the theoretical description in the Shastra. But when he said in such a personal way, it's so nice, it's such a nice thing, you'll be happy. He was talking on the strength of his own presence and realization. As one of the devotees said at those times, that I could see he was in a higher consciousness, and he said that we could be like that, and we wanted to be like that. So this is very, very direct preaching, compassionate preaching, and with urgency. He was 72 years old, and there's no time to lose, and no time to lose for us either, with all our bad habits, and we may be here one night to listen to him, and then out the door you go, the Lower East Side, and all of Manhattan is there. Tonight's a Friday night. He would have programs on Friday night. So if he doesn't grab hold of you, then off you go, maybe for many, many lifetimes. So why should they not? All these reasons for urgency, his age, his uncertainty, how long he could stay here, how long he could pay the rent, and the urgency for you that you may die at any moment. And Krishna consciousness is such a nice thing. Before you lose the opportunity, why don't you take it? But all this, we've heard people trying to sell things before with urgency and with pervasiveness, but not with this purity and not offering such a product as pure love of God by one who is a pure devotee of God. So it was really Krishna's mercy that that the devotees were able to respond to this compassionate preaching by Prabhupada. Let's hear some more.
And that thinking may be, divert your attention. But if you chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, you practice. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, but you will not be deviated what you are doing. But at the same time, you will be able to hear this sound, transcendental sound vibration. So, this is the formula given by the Lord himself. Please try to follow it. Follow the system. Always chant Hare Krishna. There is no rule, no regulation. Never mind what you are, what are doing. Simply chant and hear. We are anxious that everyone may take up this simple thing. And Lord Chaitanya says from Padma Purana, if you want to live just like animals, simply within the sphere of eating, sleeping, and mating, and defending.
Another theme, this is a very surprising one, considering the conditions of these early lectures. was Prabhupada advocating that the people hearing him should become preachers of Krishna consciousness, should join the mission and spread Krishna consciousness. So it's very surprising because, first of all, they hadn't accepted his offer to practice Krishna consciousness. But he was asking them to, just as his spiritual master did when he first met Prabhupada as a young man, he said, "You're a young, educated man, why don't you preach Krishna consciousness?" There were some differences. The difference there, they were all in Bengal and they're all raised as Krishna followers. But Prabhupada was saying that to people who didn't even know Krishna or who as yet weren't chanting Hare Krishna. He would say, you should take up Krishna consciousness and help other people because the world is in madness in the age of Kali. And this chanting taken up by the people will bring them Krishna's blessings. We used to have a picture of Lord Chaitanya in the front. On the street, you would see it. It was painted by a devotee named Haridas, Harvey Cohen, the first painting. And that would attract people on the street. So he said several times in his lectures, he said, that Lord Chaitanya, whose picture, in one lecture he said, whose picture is in the front of our, then he paused as what to call this place. Couldn't quite call it a temple. He said, Lord Chaitanya, whose picture is in the front of our, this store, he said. he led the chanting of Hare Krishna and he started this Sankirtan movement, inducing people to chant Hare Krishna. So we also should do this. Well, this was a little amazing to also be invited to do that. But at any rate, we're invited to chant Hare Krishna, whatever we do. And it's very easy to do. So whether we are preachers, we can learn so much from Prabhupada, how he conducted his affairs at 26 Second Avenue. Or if we're practicing devotees, hearing his emphasis on the very basics, to be very devoted to practicing the Hare Krishna mantra in this city, if we live in this city, wherever you go, you can take this chanting with you. In one lecture he says, you can chant in the factory, you can chant in hell, you can chant anywhere. You can take it with you. He said, it will go with you. He said, one time, I remember when I was a very little child, I was walking with my father, and I said to my father, Father, why is the moon following us? And he said, as a child, he looked up and seen that as they were walking, the moon was following them. So he said, somehow he connected that to saying that you, wherever you go, you can take this chanting with you on the street or wherever you go. So we can learn that even today and try to practice the Maha Mantra chanting in our lives. What Prabhupada said is not outdated or replaced now by all the other things that we do in ISKCON. He actually said from this room one time that the different activities that he had devised, such as the mimeographing, the Back to Godhead, and other things that we did, he said, I only give you those because you can't chant all the time. You don't have the ability. So we've manufactured different engagements. But the main thing is to chant Hare Krishna and tell other people about the chanting.